time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
What kind of story were you thinking about, Hal?
Something in a prison.
Oh, all right. And what about a prison interests you?
Jail?
For sure.
Happy anniversary.
We're so lucky.
Yeah.
So, Elliot tells me you're a writer.
In your last one, it should have done better.
There's lots of new voices. Refugees, cancer, murder, abuse.
I'm an old voice.
You're the best voice.
Maybe if Dad hadn't just been verbally abusive, it would have been a bestseller.
Don't say that.
Your memoir is great. Your new book is great.
How are you?
Feeling a little off my game.
The only reason she makes me a salad is because she wants me to lose weight, which is passive aggressive.
No, I want you to be healthy.
Doesn't matter.
Can you shut up and keep talking?
Don, you want to intervene here? We can do this at home.
Maybe Milani looks tired.
I'm aging.
What are you, nuts?
You get Botox?
Well, I just get a little bit right here. You know, I can still move my eyebrows. Watch.
So expressive.
Look. Come on, we'll go sneak up on him.
Can you say anything?
No, I can't. It feels too late.
Oh, my God. Oh, my
God.
I think I'm going to throw up.
Right, right here?
No, I don't think I can. I can't.
Going back.
If I did say that, you took it out of context.
Are you going to gaslight me now?
Been lying to me this whole time.
I wasn't lying. I was encouraging.
That's not true. You were lying to be encouraging.
You know what? As an actor, Mark isn't always great.
So the times when you don't think he's good, what do you say to him?
You were so fantastic.
Really?
Mom, you're always expecting the best from me.
You're welcome.
Just needed to do something meaningful.
What you do is kind of meaningful.
To who?
No one.
This whole world is falling apart, and this is what's consuming you.
Mom, you're not helping.
I love you.
Oh, okay, well, then never mind.
I wonder if he's going to arrive. That is, Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, or whether it would hurt his feelings if we did actually run the whole thing without him. I don't know, we've got that and the National Portrait Gallery behind us. Still, the good news is, as the trailer says, it's not just Richard Fitzwilliams, it's Natasha Wanton, who also shares with us her particular movie thoughts, views and aspects on that basis. So, Natasha, good morning. Well, yeah, it is good morning. What the hey? Enough of this Australian malarkey time where it's good evening, etc. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. A big shout out to any Australian dads, because as we're recording this, it's Father's Day in Australia today. So shout out to all of them. I hope you've been celebrating with your families and enjoying that.
Well, absolutely. And again, if you're worried about the time zone, you think, but it's a Thursday, surely in Lincoln, don't worry, you're listening to it live. If you're one of the podcast listeners who catches the whole thing earlier, then yes, it's absolutely spot on that we should say happy Father's Day to obviously, folk from that point of view, because we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I mean, that's the key thing here. We've got to be sensitive to these things. I mean, Sarah Huntley, we don't want to hurt your feelings. I mean, you know, people turn around. I'm sure you've had times where somebody's come up to you and actually maybe your daughter, maybe John possibly, who's turned around and said, you know, how is this? He said, it's been marvelous. It's been wonderful. Don't worry. It's okay. And you've been lying, basically. You've been lying. You've been telling porky pies. You've been saying it's all right because you didn't want to hurt their feelings.
I think that's what's called little white lies.
Yeah, but there is an argument for saying those little white lies can become so traumatic, you're almost about to even to throw up on the streets of New York. Thankfully, the lead character doesn't. So that actually gets an extra bonus point for me for actually catching this particular movie in more ways than one. It's extraordinary. Richard, obviously, his feelings have been hurt because he's actually sort of marched off and left the whole thing entirely. We don't care. We don't mind. Oh, he's come back now. We thought it was something we'd said, Richard. Was it something that hurt your feelings? Because I don't want to hurt your feelings, obviously. I mean, even the lead character of you, you hurt my feelings, could arguably say to have sort of issues where she is in a bar and literally just while she's in that particular bar, She starts raising issues, which I'm sure actually turns around and causes no end of problems from that. I'd probably give this a 6 overall, a kind 6, because at one stage it was a 5. But I think a 6 because, as I said, Natasha, at least although she dry heaves, she doesn't throw up on the street. So that's good, you know, from that point of view, on that basis. Richard, again, we don't want to hurt your feelings, but obviously every one of your reviews is so wonderful. Would you like to actually launch with this particular thought about you hurt my feelings?
Well, yes, I would, Alex, because it's a very, very enjoyable movie. I mean, those set in New York, those who like the sort of quirky, rather quirky Woody Allen type satires will, I think, enjoy this movie. I think they'll enjoy it enormously, far more so than you give it credit for. We meet, originally, the first character we meet is Don, played by Tobias Menzies. He's a psychiatrist, he's pretty jaded, he starts confusing the details of his patients, and he privately refers to them as crazies. That's not very encouraging, and he's married to Beth. Now, Beth is fascinating.
I would immediately demand $33,000 back from him and immediately.
No, we must start us giving out spoilers. Alex, please restrain yourself. That happens near the end of the film. And indeed, it is a sign of patient dissatisfaction with someone who certainly lost it, yes. But we're talking about Beth. Now, Beth she had a successful memoir, which revealed details of her abusive father, but she's a very nervous, rather, as a person, she needs a certain amount.
Richard, remember, this was verbal abuse. It wasn't any other abuse, it was verbal abuse, and that is key to the entire plot line. Because if it had been other kinds of abuse, she might have been an even greater best-selling author.
Well, it's always that, but of course she's trying, as you know, to write a novel. Now, what worries her is that her agent isn't very enthusiastic about it, regards her as a bit passé, which, of course, greatly concerns her. On the other hand, her husband said that he really liked it. What happens if she discovers that he didn't really mean it? The reason he was saying it was, in fact, to boost her self-confidence, which admittedly is flagging. But on the other hand, if he's going to make things
up... He should never have gone into that sock section of the store. Never have gone into the sock section. That's the basic rule. I mean, sure, many women would actually say, if you're going to follow your husband, don't check out the sock section of a store.
Well, what happens is that he's talking to, and this is the other character. We meet her sister, firstly, Sarah, played by Michaela Watkins. She is an interior designer, and indeed the job is so absolutely grotesque. It's a send-up, moving works of art in new properties for superficial individuals to accept or dismiss. But her husband is Mark, played by Orion Moed, and he's an actor. He's struggling at the moment. He's sincere enough. He's a nice guy, but he seems to wonder whether or not he'll be giving it up. They're all professional. They're all.
He was in the Pumpkin movie, Richard. And he was, and Richard, more importantly, he's in your current number one series, Succession. So, you know, on that basis alone, there's probably points being scored.
Well, I tend to judge things on their merit, not on what they necessarily appear in, and scoring points simply because in Succession it is a remarkable series. There are other actors in it, including someone called Brad Cox. I must introduce you to him sometime.
You are the Logan Roy of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, without the F words, thank goodness.
At Alex, now that's flattery. That really is. I'm savouring that moment. The one character we also must meet is Don and Beth's son, Elliot, played by Owen Teague. Now, he is managing a pot store, which is not perhaps the ultimate in ambition.
Yeah, that's marijuana and other weeds as opposed to ceramics, Richard. We need to be quite clear.
Also has literary pretensions, and indeed have his parents been handling him fairly enough? Well, the point The plot of the You Hurt My Feelings simply is when Beth and Sarah happen to enter the store Alex was referring to it, and indeed the overhears Dom and Mark talking about her novel, which she's so very sensitive about and very concerned about. Apparently he didn't like it, he made it up. And so the marriage starts, it's a marital crisis, really, because what can she trust that he says if he in fact makes up what he thinks? On the other hand, he was trying. First, he doesn't know what's wrong. And secondly, he believed that he was only acting in a decent way. The characters are rather fascinating. And if you look at the relationships between them, I got very involved in this. I thought the reason it is so good is because, most particularly, it's got an excellent, a very, very funny script. Also, you've got the New York landscapes. You've got, real people. They're well-heeled. They've got neuroses. This is nothing new in the New York scene, of course, as I mentioned Woody Allen before. But the director, Nicole Holofcener, did Can You Ever Forgive Me?, which was a really, really top-class satire. Again, in the literary milieu, that was clever, very, very clever. This, I thought, was extremely clever. Spiteful people who give it 5, what can one say?
I gave it a 6 because of actually the lack of vomit that you actually see. You don't actually see the vomit, you only actually think that she's going to vomit. If the vomit had actually been present, it would have been a 5. Without, it's a 6.
You're obsessed with this.
Bodily functions have no place on screen, Richard. Honestly, you know, we don't need it as entertainment.
Is that what Einstein said in Oppenheimer?
Einstein in Oppenheimer is a whole new world. Natasha Wanton, is this one for you, or will you basically give it a miss?
This looks like a lot of fun. I get a lot of what Richard is saying from the trailer. The chemistry between the lead couple looks really interesting. The dynamic looks good. It looks really good fun. I'm intrigued about the one part where she seems to rugby tackle her son behind a counter of a shop or some kind. She's sort of hiding, lying on top of him. That looks very interesting. Not quite sure what the intrigue is going on.
It's all due to a gang invasion, Natasha. That's all.
It's an unfortunate thing. You're hooking me in. It does look like an excellent. It does look like an excellent bit of fun and something that I'd probably just watch on a Sunday afternoon, when I just wanted to have. Yeah, I just wanted to enjoy myself and engross myself for a couple of hours. So I think I will definitely check this one out. What would you give this one out of 10, Richard?
Oh, I give it 10, partly despite Alex and partly because I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, our favourite character would probably be the security guard in the marijuana shop. Sarah Huntley, I mean, surely as someone who, like myself, has probably endured Woody Allen's views on bourgeois New Yorkies and so on, can we actually go for yet another one here? Have we not moved on? You know, a movie which actually, if you've watched or listened to the full 2.5-minute trailer, you've probably seen the entire 90-minute movie. Sarah, what about yourself?
Oh, well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but Fitzwilliam says it's a 10, and Hannah and Her Sisters is one of my favourite films. It's a yes, definitely. And actually, I was watching with some friends. It's very difficult to find a film to watch with people on holiday that everybody wants to watch. But anyway, I ended up watching Love Weekend. And it's pretty dark, like some of this is, but funny at the same time. And I am quite intrigued. I like Natasha. I'm really rather intrigued. So yes, I will be watching. How do we see it? Is it Netflix or the films?
Amazon Prime.
All right.
Other streaming services are available, but you can see it completely if you're on Amazon Prime from that point of view. Although, as I say, ultimately you think, yeah, okay, fair enough. As I say, 6 out of 10. However, you know, each to their own. And one wouldn't want to hurt anybody's feelings with respect to that whole side of things. The National Portrait Gallery has been refurbished. Do you want to talk about it, Richard? Whilst we actually hold back for Joyride, or do you want to actually sort of go for...
Yes. Well, you put it up on the screen.
I have put it up on the screen, which means nothing to the radio listener, but I just thought, well, we could throw it in there because I do know with Joyride, Natasha has made a prediction, which I don't know whether I agree with, but it's an intriguing prediction. Read your thoughts on Joyride. So I want to build the tension a bit more, and maybe we can actually do that via the National Portrait Gallery.
Yes, a very good idea. And indeed, I think I've been half a dozen times now, and I think I've seen most nooks and crannies in this. What I can only say is academically very, very impressive. I mean, it's remarkable. You also, instead of a dry and dusty and rather dull, it's really given it a facelift. It's modernized it. Also, in most cases, politically and dealing with kings and queens in past eras, it doesn't make judgments. What it does is inform, and then you see a portrait not necessarily chosen for the excellence of the art, but more just to say, so here is Elizabeth I, here is Shakespeare, here is Mary Seacole, here is Lucian Freud, or whatever. But divided into various sections, the only fault I'd make is that you can get very, very confused in the lifts if you're not used to them. And with several restaurants, the top one is constantly booked out. We have a very substantial part of it devoted to the current day and also to women. And one of the reasons for the change was first to make it more accessible, to make it more diverse, which it certainly is. Certainly, when it comes to contemporary women, there's a whole wall of mostly actresses, in fact, which works exceptionally well. And also,
is Sarah Huntley in there?
Not yet, but remember the wall, the paintings rotate. So, of course, the fact she might be there now doesn't mean that she might not be in 6 months.
A rotating Sarah Huntley is a sight to behold, I can confirm.
And, of course, unsurprisingly, slavery features a great deal. And also there are, a far from flattering look at the imperial period, but what it does, and I think that this is the triumph, is that it makes the different eras accessible, and you've got a remarkable collection of art, most particularly, ranging from Joshua Reynolds's Portrait of Oh My, which is the best and most distinguished portrait of a person of colour at that time and in the gallery, to Isabella Blow, the fashion designer in the section linked to the French Revolution. It's a very weird work. It's as though an aristocrat had a pole with their head on it, and the silhouette is absolutely macabre. You've got it all from Elizabeth I and Cromwell to Churchill in the different stages of his life to a work still in progress, which is chronicling important women of the current century. And equally, it's very important to make the point that there's always been this debate about photography being equal to painting and so on. It wasn't considered so for many years. What we see here is photography, video, literally, it's intermingled. This is most impressive, and it's fascinating to wander around. It's a huge project over 3 years. I was very, very impressed.
Sarah Huntley, is this on your list of things to do, or is it a case of don't be silly? I'm completely locked into my work for the educational system for the next 5 years, and I frankly haven't got time to do anything as far as visiting galleries are concerned, let alone the National Portrait Gallery.
Don't be silly. I'm not going to be locked in for 5 years. I'm me. I've got my life to live. No, I'm very much looking forward to when I have to go back, which is next week, is escaping to meet Fitzwilliams and go round the picture gallery and enjoy. So seriously, that is something I really want to go and see and explore. And I think picture galleries are fascinating because you go and sometimes you get a bit tired and walking around, but then the images stay with you, and it's the gift that keeps on giving, really. I think you start thinking about pictures and go back to them. So no, that's definitely one for me. How about you, Alex? Are you going?
I'm so locked into my dedicated work of academia, there's no way I have a chance to actually go to National Portrait Galleries. I mean, there are only 168 hours in the week, so for goodness sakes.
Nigel, come and get you and get you out of there. That's all the more reason, because you can't be lost. You cannot be lost under that, Alex. Promise me that. We're not going to go there this time.
I've been lost after a sea of stuff that's been coming out of my bath recently, so don't even start about that. Let's go on to Natasha Wanton. I don't want to talk about sewage. It's all right. It's been cleared now, but it was at least 2 days' work. Probably more to come. Never mind. On to yourself, Natasha. Would you, when you're back in Blighty, if ever you choose to return to this benighted, blighted country, would you actually be checking out the National Portrait Gallery?
I think I would. I'm really interested to see some of the improvements that they've made, particularly around the idea of sort of making it more accessible and more sort of diverse. During my master's degree, I spent some time doing a placement at the National Gallery of Victoria in a teaching capacity, and we focused quite heavily on alternative education and sort of scholars talking about how we need to open up and decolonize these kind of spaces to invite people in and sort of really make an impact and keep them relevant. So it'd be really interesting to see some of the changes they made and, you know, whether or not it does feel relevant to modern day society and younger age groups and not just older generations and particularly prominently white generations. So I'd be really interested to see how they've done it.
You guys must be new to town, right?
New to town, but not new to the country. We just moved from California.
Oh, we just wondered if you wouldn't mind if your daughter played with our daughter.
Audrey, say hi.
You want to play slide?
Mm-hmm. Slides off limits.
Do you want to be best friends?
Look at me, look at me, look at me now. Guess who's going back to the motherland?
It's a big deal, going to your birth country.
We used to talk about it all the time when we were little, remember? Grand adventure to find your birth mother.
So proud of you.
Be my translator in Beijing.
Audrey, I got you.
Kat lives there now.
Your famous college roommate.
You ready to lose to a celebrity?
Deadeye is coming, by the way.
Deadeye, your cousin?
Hey, Audrey.
Oh, hi.
Hey. Deadeye.
Where did that come from? You know, I think I get it.
I called the adoption agency and she lives in Haiching.
Okay, will you guys come with me? I love a grand adventure. Oh, hi.
So nice to see an American.
What do you do for work?
It's the cops are doing a bag check.
Oh my God, you're a drug dealer? You're drug dealers now, bitches.
What? Is that a condom? We can't get caught with drugs in China. We'll get jailed for life. Crazy, gotta go crazy. Hey. Hey.
I should never come to China.
People are always thinking that I have this perfect life.
I don't belong anywhere.
If you do not know where you come from, how do you know who you are?
We could still find her. Our passports are in my suitcase that got stolen.
You know who can bypass airport security? K-pop stars. Everyone remember their names?
Sassy.
Cutie.
Lisa.
Lisa, too.
I don't believe these girls are singers.
Girls, show them.
What are we supposed to show?
You're a fan of Cardi B, right?
Yeah. Is she here?
There's some whores.
Hey, honey, you good? Did you get the Coke bags out?
Yeah, but only 7, and I think I put in 8.
Just push, pull, I mean twist it.
It's not a puppet, it's crazy.
Well, we've just heard Roxette and Joyride. Sadly, that is not part of the upcoming movie that obviously you've also heard the trailer for, which entailed an awful lot of edits just to actually drop the F word from it. Four, if I recall. Still, never mind. That's the joy of Siren Radio. We don't cuss and utter F words on air, no matter how many times Richard might want to incarnate himself as the Logan Roy of reviews and so on. But this, Natasha, you've already predicted again, Richard's thoughts on this. I'm not so sure. Richard, Joyride.
Well, Joyride is indeed very joyous. It's certainly unusual. And certainly there are scenes in it that once you've seen them, you won't forget them. We meet Audrey, played by Ashley Park. She's a Chinese adoptee with white parents living in White Hills, Seattle, and with her childhood best friend, Lolo, played by Sherry Kohler. And Audrey's Lolo is into sex positive art. There's a thought, Alex, if you're thinking of decorating in Leicester.
Any point? And actually, decorating in Leicester is something I've never even considered in my entire life, Richard.
No, Audrey is promised promotion if she can close a deal with a Chinese businessman in China. And she and Lolo fly out, and they're joined by Vanessa, nicknamed Deadeye, Lolo's cousin. She is played by Sabrina Wu. And in Beijing, she meets with a college roommate, Kat, who is played by Stephanie Hu. She is engaged to a very religious character, Clarence, who's on or acts as part of the soap that she's involved with. Now, what happens when the four of them are unleashed on China? This is actually a movie, and it's got a serious side about identity and also the diaspora, the Asian diaspora in the United States, and Audrey's search, which she is very, very reluctant to do, but it's being done for her because the others are working behind her back, for her birth mother, takes her actually to Korea and some very sensitive scenes. But in between that particular part of the story, my goodness me, we've got scenes we don't forget. I mean, when they're all gang-banged, or is it the other way around? My goodness, a sex scene, which, putting it mildly, isn't the type of scene that's going to appeal to everybody. Indeed, they're so lively that they positively... Well, they cause an NBA team to be limping the next morning. And the way that's filmed, I thought, was very funny. Lots of raunchy footage there. There's also a scene in a train where they're traveling across China and they meet a fellow American. She turns out to be a drug pusher. The only way they can get around that is quite literally inhaling all the drugs before they are thrown off the train. Well, again, plenty of fun. Underneath, there is, as I say, a sensitive side to this. And it's actually the mixture. There's a musical number because Deadeye is linked to a particular type of...
K-pop, Richard, is what you're looking for, K-pop.
K-pop, thank you, Alex. I'm grateful for the information. And indeed, it's quite a lively number. This is a lively movie. It's colourful. And also... tattoos are involved, Alex. Now, I will not go into too much detail, but the facts are that...
It's not just the tattoos, Richard. It's the places that the actual drugs are actually stored in and the challenges that you actually have to get out of the whole thing, which, frankly, already spirals this down to a 2 out of 10 for me.
But, Alex, that's a judgment on what's being shown, not how it's being shown.
It's the movie. It's a film. It's the image.
It's... very, very funny. And it's colourful. It's not really like Crazy Rich Asians.
It's vulgar, totally... Richard. It's vulgar.
Those who disprove would certainly find plenty to back up the idea that it's vulgar. But the point is that I thoroughly enjoyed it. I can tell you that the audience, because there were quite a few people in the cinema, which is in itself surprising, were certainly enjoying it. So I'm going to an 8.
Yeah. As I said, Natasha, he's pretty much, this is the sort of thing where he throws us a curveball, and I'm afraid What were you saying, Natasha? You were predicting a 4, I believe.
Right. I watched this trailer and I was in absolute hysterics. It was brilliant. This is my kind of movie with the girls on a Friday night, just letting off steam. It looks hilarious. However, watching this, dying at the line, it's not a bop it, it's my, I'm going to insert the word bottom for a choice of a better word. Looking at that, I'm like, Richard, not, I can't believe Richard's reviewing this. This looks a bit spicy. I predicted that Mr. Fitzwilliams was going to give it a 4. So I thought he would think it was trivial, like trash, but apparently he's proven me wrong. So that's a lovely surprise.
Sadly, something's happened to Richard over the years. I don't know what it is, but still, never mind. Sarah, is this something that you're going to go for? I mean, do you like technicolor vulgarity about a diaspora and indeed a young Asian child who basically is refused permission to actually play slides in North America?
I'm a bit in a quandary here. I mean, I haven't seen it, but and particularly that Natasha and Richard liked it, but it just from the explaining about it, something that I probably wouldn't actually really like. So I think I'm going to leave it that if I was with some friends and they were watching it, like Natasha said, I'd think, okay, I'll have a look. But I have to say, and I really, really, really don't like, what's that music that they were all
K-pop.
Into? Oh, yeah, no. I mean, that does absolutely nothing for me. And when I was working out in Hong Kong, a lot of the young people, I sound like really old, like Agatha Christie here, didn't they? But a lot of the young people were really into that. And I had to put one of those K-pop, is that a chicken? Anyway, the song in, into what we were doing this Dubai show, just to get them off my backs, to go, okay, hey, I'm cool. I'll do a, how do you say it, K-pop?
K-pop.
K-pop. As in Korean pop, as opposed to J-pop, which is Japanese pop.
See, that's how like I'm K-pop.
Gangnam style, please, sir. Gangnam style.
Yeah. No, I have to say, for Huntley, it's a no.
I was quite surprised that we haven't had any mention from Richard about an obituary for, of course, a gentleman who could well have been a royal family if indeed things had worked out another way. And indeed, Mohammed Al-Fayed had actually sort of, through his son, Dodi, managed to get involved with respect to the British family more than just Harrods, of course, and the whole notion of the Windsors meeting up with the Al-Fayeds via Diana Spencer is another alternate dimension. Richard, he passed away recently. Net worth fairly substantial. Your thoughts, or is it a case of no? I never comment on somebody who says that.
I very definitely got thoughts on Mohammed Al-Fayed. Funnily enough, I included him in the International Who's Who when I was editor, and he and Tylee Rowland had this war. I mean, Al-Fayed getting Harrods. It was very funny because Rowland was very threatening about the details we published about him, and indeed the only way around that was not to send him his entry for checking every year. But Al-Fayed, who added the Al, to make it sound more aristocratic, was all very cooperative. And we put his date of birth at 1933, which was later discovered to be completely false.
It was 27th, 1929, as Sarah could have told you.
Absolutely, you're quite right. But in fact, yes, I mean, a buccaneering figure, no question about that. And somebody who wanted to be part of the British establishment and always felt he was rejected. And I'm afraid indelibly in my memory, his son's romance with Diana, of course, that's part of legend, as is its tragic consequences. But I would remind everyone, I'm sure they need no reminding, that the driver, Henri Paul, of the Mercedes that fatal night when Diana and Dodi were killed so tragically, he was an Al-Fayed employee. He was speeding because the car was being pursued by paparazzi. He was on drugs and he was drunk. And however...
He was having a joyride, Richard.
Well, I can only say that as far as Al-Fayed was concerned, when things are sub judice and you've got plenty of money and he really used his cash, his money, his pulling power, his brand, if you like it, during these years, whilst there was an inquest in France and then a police inquiry here and then an inquest here, It was almost impossible, of course, because it was being investigated, to put out, well, you couldn't put out anything that was official. That was when he started this conspiracy theory that the Duke of Edinburgh and MI6 were responsible for these the tragic deaths. There were all sorts of reports of flashes in the tunnel and so forth. The only thing that in fact wasn't, and I covered the inquest at the Royal Courts of Justice, and when eventually, after years, Mohammed Al-Fayed was in the witness box, he was even worse than Paul Burrell, who was Diana's so-called rock, her buckler. All his theories were literally, with a Q&A, he couldn't justify them. And, I mean, it was of course you're dealing with a grieving father. Of course you're dealing with someone whose hopes have been shattered, and indeed someone who's resorted to, well, I would say, underhand techniques, because there were a series of programs that he funded. Endlessly, he tried to sow the idea that there was a conspiracy. How a conspiracy could have worked since the decoy was so last minute is another matter. But the facts were that this was a ruthless attempt by a buccaneering businessman who was extraordinarily charismatic, according to reports. I never met him, but there have been some tributes that have brought this out. But when actually he was questioned, I mean, it just crumbled. There was no substance behind it. So, I mean, from that point of view, I think it's very, very, it's tragic what happened. But it does show you're looking at succession. Alex mentioned it earlier. The use and misuse of a lot of money, a lot of power, but that doesn't make it right. And whereas anyone would sympathize with the collapse of his dreams and indeed the disaster of the whole thing and losing his son, it was his employee who was driving, and the responsibility ultimately rest with him, and he tried to alter that, and in ways that seemed to me very, well, outrageous, really.
But at the end of the day, at least he was very good for Fulham Football Club, and they have at least appreciated the joys of that. Now, Sarah, I appreciate that the net worth, apparently, of Mohammed Al-Fayed is a mere £2 billion, which is actually considerably less than was currently spent in the transfer window by Premier League sides recently. So $2 billion, it's not really, but I think that might be $2 billion, actually. So it's even less in terms of the equivalent. Sarah, is this something where you think, well, I'm pleased he sold Harrods because I can now go in there and purchase the necessaries?
Well, for me, I don't really like Harrods because, as being an out-of-work actress in my youth quite a bit, I've done temporary jobs in there. And I worked in the perfume bit as a sort of, somebody went sick, I'd come in. And I really disliked the whole atmosphere in there, to be honest. So I try not to go in. I really dislike Harrods, sorry. And I totally agree with what Richard said. I think people always like to think there's some mystery or sensationalised. The terrible thing was those people were killed on that night because of bad driving. And
it's as crazy as saying that COVID was an international conspiracy to basically promote Zoom, but never mind.
If Diana and Dodie had had seatbelts, it might have been very different.
Well, clunk click every trip, but that's another slogan that was used by a chap who's since been disgraced. Let's move to Natasha. Any thoughts on Al-Fayed, or is it a case of, well, I'm not really a Fulham fan or indeed a football fan, so why should I care?
I'm scandalously not a football fan. Sorry, dear listener. No, I think it's been a very interesting sort of legacy that he's left. As Richard said, obviously when he was in the witness box, he couldn't articulate anything that he was saying. Unfortunately, it's had a big impact, this conspiracy that he's said, and it is still very much alive and kicking. You see lots of memes about it on the internet all the time. So it's clearly stuck. There's clearly a lot of people who still point fingers at Windsor for what happened. And, you know, I think that that's probably going to be ongoing for a little while. So maybe it doesn't matter in the end that his witness box or who was responsible, what he said has unfortunately had the impact that he intended it to. So maybe in his mind, at least, he sort of rests thinking that he's won a little bit. But no, very interesting man, very tragic situation. Still, and
good news, 94, he can now be interviewed by Sir Michael Parkinson.
That would be a heck of an interview, wouldn't it? You'd love, that'd be amazing. I'd love to sort of talk to a medium just to get hold of some of that. That would be brilliant.
And on that little joyride, we will motor on to say, Natasha Wanton, huge thanks. Sarah Huntley, always delighted to touch base with your good self. Richard Fitzwilliams, any teasers to what you're going to be looking at next time?
Well, next time, yes, there'll be The Innocent and also Theatre Camp.
Now, Sarah, you literally swore us to secrecy about anything else. I'm not sure whether we've covered the one that you've been to see with Richard, which you disagreed with.
The Innocent, it's coming
up. The Innocent, that's next week.
It is that one. All right, okay.
It was an amazing evening. Very, very good. But I'm not going to.
Well, that's all we should say at this moment.
Yes.
Apart from, obviously, those immortal words, keep watching the movies. Thank you.
there could never be a portrait of my love, for nobody could paint a dream you will never see. A portrait of my love, for miracles are never seen. Anyone who sees her soon forgets the Mona Lisa. It would take, I know, a Michelangelo, and he would need the glow of dawn that paints the sky above, to try and paint a portrait of my love. Take, I know, a Michelangelo, and he would need the glow of dawn that paints the sky above, to try and paint a portrait of my love.
We are a society.
I'm supposed to be.
Won't get away.